Utah legislature, follow the advice of St. Ronald Reagan, tear down that Zion curtain. This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Two things are sure, death and taxes, and online sales taxes. I'm Representative McKay on the right.
You want to hear my gripe about Peyton Manning? Tune in to Both Sides of the Aisle.
Pass me a bud.
I'm Natalie Gochner, but first, this news. From the Capitol, this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I represent the political center, and I have on the political right Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning, Natalie.
And on the political left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning.
We are all...
stole his Natalie. Did you see that?
You did. Yeah, you did. We are all enthusiastic here at the Capitol because it's the week of the New Hampshire primaries, and the results are in, and Trump trumps them all. Dan, I don't know if you are happy about that or sad, but let's hear your commentary.
Well... Trump trumps them all. He got whooped in Iowa.
Yeah, but he whooped everyone else in New Hampshire.
I know. So it's, you know, but he was polling so favorably that it really
wasn't.
Not a
surprise.
It wasn't that surprising.
The bigger surprise was that Rubio fell so far.
That Rubio fell so far. But his debate performance was the worst I have seen in a long time.
Jim, didn't this just show the talent of a Chris Christie to just take him down like that?
I think what it shows is that for all the complaints about our process of electing a president, this 2 or 2.5 year run, it's really tough to get to the position where you win if you don't have the team, if you don't have the temperament, if you don't have a lot of the tools.
The smarts, yeah.
In the British system where they call a snap election and 6 weeks later you have a new prime minister, who knows how many people could have been elected between now and then. So a good thing about this whole thing is the system exposes the robot that was Rubio for what he was, and he just got stuck there like some kind of a glitch in a computer, and he exposed the real Rubio, which is why he's out.
It really was glitch-like. That's the best description I've heard of it. Because, you know, Christie calls him out and says, you repeat stuff all the time. And he says, yeah, but if you think the president is doing this on accident, it's literally like somebody pulled his Woody cord, you know, and let it go. And you just... There's a snake in my boots.
The computer programming term is a do loop. You know, it goes over again, and it goes over again.
See, but Natalie always finds a smart way to tell the story.
I got
Woody from Toy Story.
I'll make a prediction here on Both Sides of the Aisle that Rubio makes a very fine comeback. And so Jim's saying that he's been exposed, but there's some depth to this man.
You know, I said a long time ago that Ralph Becker would be the first peg to fall in a whole political climate all across America to throw the bums out. We want change. We want things happening. I disagree. I think Rubio is Mr. Establishment. He's gone, and I suspect we are going to have Mr. Trump as the Republican nominee, and we're
Jim, he's – you know, with all the candidates, he always will get around 35% of whatever he gets. But the minute you have fewer and fewer opposing him, all of a sudden you're going to get somebody with 40, 50, 60% of the vote. I don't think Trump can carry ever greater than 35 to 40%. And Dan, I want to see if you agree with me on that.
Yeah, I would agree. He's
not going to get it.
This brokered convention is not going to work out well for Trump. I mean, I was just starting to look at the numbers and the people that are coming, you know, the primaries that are on the horizon.
Yeah.
They don't look good for him.
Yeah, so South Carolina will be a resurgent for someone, Nevada another.
Yeah.
But if you look at it,
it's going to be a cruise. I think South Carolina is a cruise.
So Christie will fall out of the race.
I think but I'm going to miss his presence.
Yeah, but his votes won't go to Trump. They'll go to a governor.
Fair.
And they won't go to Rubio.
Fair.
Probably.
Natalie, you in your moderate, academic, wonderful way, have been saying this from day one and predicting this demise as if somehow, and they just keep falling. You need to get it in your head, as do many Republicans, that, you know what? Donald Trump speaks for a lot in your party. He's probably going to win the nomination. And he is the just dessert that the Republicans nationally deserve for having dipped down and made this deal with the devil and the Tea Party and now you're going to have to suffer with it.
All right. Well, Jim, let's do a dinner on that one, shall we?
All right. I like it.
But right. I also want to say, we need to talk about the Democrats, but I just, in my own kind of imagination, I've been thinking of the dream ticket for me. The dream ticket for me would be a Bush-Rubio. It'll never happen. But it keeps the inexperience of Rubio at bay in the Veep, you know, position, but gives you this senior.
You think they could mend fences?
Never. I don't think they could in a minute. But that would
Bush
be such a ticket.
Bush burned that bridge. He burned that bridge.
The other ticket I would like is a Rubio Kasich. Our producer shook his head.
That is, you know, because Kasich has this moderate appeal.
And experience.
And appeal, you know.
Yeah, the modern. Anyway.
What about Bloomberg Herbert? Okay, I'm just throwing it out there.
I felt like a lead balloon.
What?
Why do you always got to ruin the party?
No. Jim, take us over to the Democratic side. I mean, good heavens. Hillary.
What about
Hillary's
Bernie
hurting.
And Hillary vice presidency?
Bernie and Hillary, yeah, like she would take
Hillary's going to go south, and she's going to get, you know, the minority votes, and she's going to start to come together. But she is a seriously wounded candidate. She's not a great campaigner. She screams a lot that doesn't sit well with a lot of people. She's not getting the women's vote like you would think. She's not getting the young vote.
You look at those rallies. You look at that energy. You look at the kids. Hillary people are going to have to go back and totally recalibrate. They're going to have to figure this out.
Yeah.
Because there is not energy.
There's more energy.
There's not enthusiasm.
Bernie's got the energy.
It's not there.
They're doing it every week, though, Jim. Well, they're reinventing Hillary every week.
Kind of like Warren.
So predictions at this point. Who would you predict comes out on the Democratic side, given all you're saying about this movement and this revolution?
I think it's 50-50.
Okay, so he can't pick it. What do you
really?
Pick?
Really? On the Dem side, it's 50-50.
Yeah, I mean, there is energy. There is enthusiasm. And there's somebody speaking directly to Democrats who are fed up with the culture the way that it is, and I think there's a real shot.
My daughter's 24, and she's in the Bernie camp. So there's a woman and youth, and she's in the Bernie camp. Who do you predict on the D side, Dan?
D side, I'm going to call it for Bernie.
Okay.
Right now.
I'm going to stay with Hillary.
It's over.
But I just want it so bad.
But I'm going to say that Hillary can't prevail in the final.
It's a graph. You've got Hillary dropping like a lead balloon. And you've got Bernie rising like a phoenix.
That was
How about on the R side, Dan? Who would you predict at this point? I mean, I realize we're only two states in, but what are you
who's
seeing?
Who's running again?
I mean, do you think that this Bush reinvention could happen?
I don't.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He's
if he had not gone so negative on Rubio, mm-hmm. I think it's possible. But he's been almost the entire time for all the debates, the whole thing. He's been an also-ran candidate.
Yeah.
Even though, candidly, he has a conservative resume that is strong. He accomplished a lot as a governor. Got a lot done. He was able to bring people together.
Yeah.
As much as I hate the Bush triumvirate, it could be interesting.
Interesting. I keep thinking in this campaign about the book Team of Rivals, about Lincoln's presidency.
Yeah.
And you start thinking of all these strange things, like a Rubio Christie, you know, ticket.
Yeah, for somebody to say, okay, we got an idea. Lincoln's going to be the president and Seward is going to be his
unimaginable.
Vice president. Everybody's like, what?
But that kind of thing could happen this
John
election
Kennedy,
year.
Yeah. Picking Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You could get something very kind of strange.
Accomplished nothing punk young guy.
Yeah.
Picking the wise old sages.
We just have a minute left in this segment, but let's just take just a couple of seconds and talk about, and I'll go to you first, Dan. Do you think that this, what Jim's talking about, this feeling that we need to kick the bums out will translate to Utah? Right now, I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
I know we saw it with the Becker thing, but that was an 8-year mayoral kind of thing, and it had its, you know, but I don't see this hurting Herbert.
I don't see this affecting Herbert at all.
Jim, make your case.
If he gets elected, it'll be 70-30.
There's a storm coming, and it has to be a perfect storm. But it is marijuana on the ballot, and it is Trump as a candidate. It is record numbers of Republicans staying out of the election, and it's Democrats coming back in legislative races and in other places to claim what's rightfully theirs. It's a possibility,
rightfully
maybe even a probability.
There.
And we'll be covering it here on both sides of the aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. In our next segment, we're going to talk about the legislative session.
This is Jim DeBacchus, proudly on the left.
This is Dan McKay, far, far, far right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. We're on Capitol Hill, and this is both sides of the aisle. 2016 legislative session is very much live fire, and lots of things are happening. This is a real sleeper, so I don't know how to make it interesting, Dan, but what is going on with retirement on Capitol Hill? How do you make this interesting to our listeners?
I have that and tax policy, and everybody's like, well, how do you make that interesting?
Let's go talk about something interesting like the marijuana bill or something.
I know. So
we covered all that last week when I did kind of my stuff on sex education. So maybe we can do a retirement this
week. You mix sex education and marijuana, and I missed it? Wow.
Just keep going. Just keep going.
So, you know, there's some changes back this year to talk about retirement and what to do about the reforms that were had 6 years ago. And
it's for state employees.
For state employees, and not just state employees, but it's subdivisions of the state as well. I mean, cities and counties are participants, and so are teachers as part of this retirement system. And, you know, they're back making changes to the retirement system, saying they're having problems with retention. And my response to them is, no, you're having a problem with retention because the wage they bring home on a daily basis is not outstripping the marketplace.
Right.
And so you've got to do something about your daily wage. And trying to convince people that that's what needs to be done. And the response I get back from everybody saying is there's no will locally to increase taxes or to change the tax structure or to fix our budget so that we're paying our employees more.
Yeah.
To me, I am fundamentally frustrated.
The economist in me, Dan, would just say it's the total compensation package.
Yes, unless, and I would argue this, because if you're under the age of 30, mm-hmm. or if you're under the age of, let's go as high as 35. Under 35, are you really thinking about the retirement package, or are you thinking about, do I have enough money to go
payment.
To date night, and I'm, and am I going to be able to make my house payment?
Jim, can you make this interesting to our listeners?
No. Tax policy? No.
If not, I want to go to the Zion Curtain.
All right, let's Zion.
Let's just say this, that the state is not running the state like a business. No business would allow their most valuable state employees, of which there are 12,000 in this state, to get away. I mean, we ripped their pensions for all the new people. They're not competitive as far as private. Our thinking is the 1950s on what we ought to pay our employees, and we're losing that expertise. And everybody knows, oh, my goodness, it's so much better to pay a valuable, knowledgeable employee a little more than to hire two or three don't-know-what-they're-doing people to come in and try to fill that gap. It is a terrifically important issue for the state.
All right, Jim, you've got a bill that deals with the Zion Curtain. You want to eliminate it, and this is one of these things where, as a moderate, I'd cross right over the left and be right with you on that.
Yes.
Really? Well, I just don't. This is my business side, Dan. I don't understand why these chain businesses have to come make these special modifications to be in our state. And I'm all for a lot of regulation and taking care of the alcohol problem, but I don't think the Zion Curtain does that.
We have a lot to be proud of in alcohol in the state. We lead about every category as far as DUIs and every bad
category. In a favorable
category.
Way.
Yeah, in a favorable way.
Say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And now whether or not our liquor laws are to blame or the fact that a big chunk of our population just doesn't drink, I don't know.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, we have that. So we need to find a way to preserve those things. I mean, who wants to be number one in child abuse or those kind of things? So we're not. We do a good job on that.
Man.
But then we're stuck with this legacy of a bunch of stupid, ridiculous, horrendous regulations that serve no public safety purpose, and nobody can really explain why they're there. They have no purpose other than making Utah look unbelievably and unjustifiably weird.
Yeah.
And it hurts us in tourism. It hurts us in trying to attract the kind of business people. And nobody can justify them. And I don't understand why we're going to wait another year, because that's what the plan is. We're going to go study this for another year. Let's repeal what we know is stupid right now.
Dan,
tear down the Zion Curtain.
I don't like the oddness factor. You know, and so I'm all for tougher laws for people who drive under the influence and things like that. And I don't even mind some of the bar regulations, but the Zion Curtain is just one of these things that I think puts us in the weird category.
But see, it just highlights the weirdness of the Senate, because the House has
here comes
voted
the rivalry.
The House has voted to remove the Zion's Curtain. the last, I don't know, 3 years in a row. And the Senate doesn't do it. So, you know, Jim, it's your people, not mine.
Yeah, I'm not justifying them on this one.
Hey, let's go to a topic that I'm really excited about. We have a beautiful house office building up here on Capitol Hill, and there's a movement afoot to rename this building. Dan, you have a lot of background with this. Tell us the story a little bit.
Yeah, so last year there was a little bit of a brouhaha about when you're trying to name something after somebody, you try to fit something that fits with the person, mm-hmm. and you put them together, right?
Yeah, yeah. They got to be related.
Becky Lockhart was part of funding the I-15 core and getting that project built from Point of the Mountain down to, you know, down to Patient Spanish Fork. The problem was that portion of the freeway is also named after the veterans, and so there were a lot of people that objected to the bill one way or the
other. And it really doesn't honor the person when there's a big
war. Who wants
war.
To be a road?
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be somebody that everybody's driving over.
And then also just the whole war of it. You know, I mean, you want this to be a unanimous state kind of decision.
Well, and I didn't like it. And I got to disclose my bias. Mm-hmm. Of all, there's 75 members in the House, 74 people sponsored the bill. There's only one that did not, and it's me. Okay. So I started talking with several of my colleagues about a way we could do this. And one of our colleagues, Sue Duckworth, decided to run a bill this year to name the House building, which is on the west side of the campus, mm-hmm. after Speaker Lockhart, and call it the Lockhart House Building.
I love it.
I think it's a great idea.
She loved the Capitol. Anybody that knows her,
and she loved the house.
And she loved the house.
And she had all this mark as a woman leader in this state.
And when she left... She left a vacuum for women's voice, unfortunately,
and
that still has yet to be filled.
Yeah.
It's so much better an idea than some, which we're talking about, the Energy Solutions House building. And I mean, this is
gracious.
Much, much better.
Yeah. Jim, let's go to another topic. You'll know something about medical marijuana. Just having fun. The church, LDS Church, came out and opposed at least one of these bills. And did that have – was that in any way unseemly to you?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I think that everybody, every group, everybody should have their right to have their say. But once you put your hat into a political matter, you cannot then draw the cloak back and say, oh, but, you know, we're a religion and you can't – attack us. So it is, I think that's part of the reason why you see the LDS Church with great deliberation and not very much frequency get into these political matters, because justifiably so, when you get into the political fray,
it's messy.
It's messy, and you're going to get messed on. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
So why should you exclude them or anybody from when they want to do it, do it.
So was the bill going to pass without their intervention, and now is it going to fail?
I don't buy either of those. I've been talking around the Senate. It lost by one vote last time, and there's a certain momentum to this. And when you sit in those committee hearings and you listen to mothers and you watch those children, I mean, it's the most difficult thing I've ever seen, where these children are shaking and it is
this year.
Marijuana.
It's not going to pass. Will not pass.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I
understand your point. In other words, if it brings comfort and helps a subpopulation, you know, there seems to be a medical reason why we ought to address that. It's just, I'd love the science to get us there.
The problem is Congress in Washington prohibits explicitly any studies about marijuana and the medical use. So we don't, the National Institute of Health is precluded from any kind of a health study to figure out what all these things are. We need to repeal that. And Brian Shiazawa has a bill that would repeal, as a resolution that encourages Congress to repeal that.
Dan, you have a big assignment up here on Capitol Hill. We're sitting in your beautiful office up here, and you're in a prime location.
Do you like the decorations?
And it all deals with the revenue tax assignment that you have.
Yeah.
There's a big online sales tax bill this year. Tell us, give our audience some of the dynamics of that. I've heard Senator Bramble, present it to a group of business leaders.
Well, and everyone has to understand, we already tax online sales transactions. We already do.
The tax is there.
The tax is there. When you fill out whatever form it is, one of the questions, whatever the software it is you use, or if you actually use the state's paper forms.
Give us your address. Give us your zip code.
Tell us what your online sales tax payment is, and remit it, please, to the state tax commission.
Yeah.
That's part of the deal. Now, unfortunately, Natalie, you would know this number. How many households do we have in the state?
Yeah.
Do you know? Is it?
I'm going to say like 500,000 to 600,000.
500,000 to 600,000. Yeah. I was guessing the same thing.
Okay.
Okay. So of that, we have, of that, guess how many households pay the tax?
Oh, it's about 115.
Patrice Aaron.
115 people. Ooh, that's lower than I was.
Oh, I don't know.
It's about 12,000 households. You know, one way or another.
I'm doing people that reported on their income.
Yeah, these are people that actually reported on their income. So there are 12,000 people.
Yeah, and it's every legislator and everybody that could be exposed for not doing it.
But our sales tax – okay, but this is the part I know. This is
like,
wonky.
Is
this is probably the part nobody cares about. But our sales tax revenue is at least a consumptive-based tax. You choose how much you pay. It's the only tax that's that way. And as a result, I think it's a stronger – you know, it fluctuates more. It's more volatility. And there's the regressive nature of things, but everybody's contributing based on consumption. Yeah. If you've got a lot more money, you're consuming more, Jim, so you're paying more of the tax. But that being said, that's the one element that everybody up here is saying, well, I don't like the property tax, I don't like the income tax, and I don't like the sales tax. But of those three, I like the sales tax more.
Yeah.
So that's all right. That's why everybody's trying to deal with the online transactions.
So you go and you buy a flat screen TV from your neighborhood.
Not big dollar items like that.
From RC Willie.
You buy it from RC Willie. You're going to pay that 5.75% sales tax. You go online, you buy the same thing. You don't pay that. Mm-hmm. Now, why would you have an incentive that gets people to buy things out of state? And you know how much that comes to every year now? Somewhere around $200 million.
Yeah.
So we're penalizing our local businesses. This is not an internet tax because it has nothing to do with the internet. This is simply...
It's a fairness tax.
It's a fairness tax, it is cheating our school kids out of $200 million. We ought to end this, but you know why it's not changing? It's not because of the Utah legislature. Where is Mia on this? Where is Bishop? Where is Chris Stewart? They are diddling around. Congress needs to change this immediately.
Yeah, this is a federal matter in a very big way.
Right.
Because it deals with interstate commerce. Well, we do a lot of talking on this show, but we also want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment or a topic you want us to debate on the program, feel free to email us at comments@kcpw.org. You can also call, leave a message at 801-359-5279. Gentlemen, it's time for us to go to gripes, and I'm so excited to hear yours, Jim.
My gripe is the Chamber of Commerce and Education First finally came out with their big tax proposal, and here's what their innovative thing does. It takes 0.78%, adds it to everybody, including really poor people's income tax. This little bubble of a group from the chamber didn't bother to check with any poor people before they came out this tax, which would have that poor mother of four paying the same tax as the Huntsmans and the Romneys. It's a bad plan.
Wow. With a $500 million positive fiscal note for education, it's a bad plan.
Interesting, Jim. And I just want to make I don't work for the Chamber of Commerce. I do serve as their chief economist. But I want to make sure you know that their interest is to put this to the people. It's not to actually do it. It's to get – put this on the ballot and let people tell us what they want. They're not asking for you to raise the tax. They're asking for the public to take a generational decision and weigh in on it.
Let's do away with the flat tax. And then once we have – taking care of the richest of the rich, then we can look at poor people and say, well, you contribute too.
Dan, I'll have to be careful not to gripe on his gripe, but you go ahead.
Yeah, boy, I'll be honest, my gripe is sleep.
You're not getting enough?
I have not slept for a couple of days. But it's just...
Have you tried Tylenol PM? It's pretty
good.
Yeah,
it does pretty good. It doesn't stop the work from coming in, though.
You're so still more coherent than Rubio.
So there's that element. So if I'm a little off today, that's why. It's just haven't had a lot of sleep.
I'm going to text you at 4 in the morning and just say, how's it going, brother? I'm not sleeping either.
I got an angry text from somebody back this morning who I texted saying... Why are you texting me at 4 a.m.?
So. Oh, I got a gripe, and they're not giving me enough time on the program to do it. But I'm just going to go back to the Super Bowl. Peyton Manning, you know, love the career he's had, but there was a wonderful article in Deseret News about the marketing that he's done, you know, where they show him and he's drinking Gatorade, and afterwards they ask him, what are you going to do about in retirement? And he said, oh, I'm going to hug my family, say a prayer, and drink a Budweiser. It's just too much commercialization.
Which of those didn't he like?
You know, he said that he didn't get paid. He said he didn't get paid for it. But come on.
I don't know. It just seemed pretty tainted to me.
But it was a good game if you like defensive football.
And who likes defensive football?
Well, I'm just going to say, Peyton Manning, leave your Budweisers and your Gatorades in your private time and let's talk football. I'm Natalie Gochner. I've been joined by Senator Jim DeBacchus, Representative Dan McKay. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. It's produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.